Welcome to the Big Deuce from the Perp.
Big Deuce. Oh, man. This is Tony Vicenda along with my good buddy, Father Colin Parrish. And for some reason, whenever I want to type something in as a note to our editor, instead, I keep on hitting stop record, which dumps our recording out. Believe it or not, this is not our first podcast ever. This is our mid-season between season one and season two. We're on a little break right now. Normally on The Threshold, we sit down with somebody and interview them about what they believe, what shaped that belief, why it matters. And then we point out those things that are good, true, beautiful, or resonate with our experience. And today we're just kind of talking about things that we think are important. We're going to have a couple episodes where we just chat a little bit about life's big questions, or maybe life's not so big questions, but things that we think people should talk about over a good beer or a glass of a horned hair, young bourbon whiskey, the mongrel of all whiskeys, which is what we are drinking this evening, bottled out of Austin, Texas. So while we sip on that, here is our normal intro. Hey, come on in. I really feel like we've reached a place in our culture where religious conversations can seem tense or even taboo. So every week, I invite a different guest to sit down with me to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters. My name's Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold. So, Father Parrish, what do you think we should call these episodes?
I named like four, and they were all strange.
Yeah. I put something that I thought originally was really funny, but I don't want to talk about now as the title of the recording, which is Demon Between the Seasons, which is some sort of homage to like Gentleman on the Streets, Demon in the Sheets, which probably is not. Yeah. Not what we want to go with.
Think about Schwasty Musings or the Big Deuce from the Perp.
Sounds so wrong. Oh, man. If this is your first time doing this, I promise it's typically better than this. It's not. Welcome back, everybody. Apparently, when we don't do this for a while, we forget how to make any of it work or happen. We are going to sit down this week and just kind of chat about two big questions, or at least questions that we thought would be fun to talk about. The first one is, what is one emotion we wish we could control better? And the second one is, what are those middle school jams we had? What stood out to us from them? And then why were they important to us? Why does any of that matter? And I think these are two great questions to sit around and chat about with people, whether you know them well, don't know them. I feel like they're two things that everybody kind of has one of those two of. I was really surprised the more I thought about it, about what my answer to the first question was. But Father Parrish, what is one emotion that you wish you could control better?
I wish that I could kind of control my sense of sadness or depression, not like the chemical depression that a lot of people are stricken with, but you know, my own, I'm a kind of a melancholic personality, granted. And so my own sense of sadness, I wish I can control more, and the sense and the feeling of boredom.
Okay.
Even though they don't seem connected, I think they are in sometimes, but as I thought about it more, actually, even though I do want to control them more, I'm happy about them.
Why are you happy about them?
Well, like, when it comes to boredom or sadness, they indicate something to me. They point to something. Like, there's a question behind them. And so, you know, why is it? It's not just simply why am I bored or why am I sad, but it's that there is a need, right? And a need for something that actually like helps me like kind of narrow that down and really ask a question. And for me, in prayer.
That's awesome. I was really surprised by mine. And that was as I sat down, like initially, and as I've talked to some people about this, I think a lot of the time there's a tendency to think about what a lot of people would associate as like a negative or emotion. Like, I wish I had less of, or that, you know, impacts me negatively in some capacity. And what I realized is I wish I had a better control over a sense of joy in my life, and not like happiness, like, oh, I just want to always be happy, right? But kind of that sense of joy that, like, even when things aren't great, am I able to actually tap into a deeper sense of joy in a way that actually I can communicate to other people around me?
Yeah, I having heard your answer before, like I wish I could kind of switch mine to your experience there. I think that's really, I have a desire for that, like to being able to share spontaneously joy, like people can just pick up joy for me.
Yeah. And I think that's something that, like, a lot of times when we think about the things we wish we could control, we're so often, like, concerned about the things that are kind of like passionate or very internal responses that we will never really have perfect control over, rather than the things that we can actually, like, work on doing more or doing better. And so it took me a while to get there. It was like listening to people over and over and over and again, and thinking, like, okay, but, like, what's the root thing we all want more of, not the thing that we want less of. And for a lot of people, it came back to, like, that was joy. And so I think there's,
it's not enough to point to an absence. I need to be pointed towards a presence.
Yeah.
And it's more effective, or if you want to use a term, it's more damn fun.
Yeah. To actually, like, have something that we're offering. And like, I was talking to somebody earlier tonight. We did healing prayer tonight at the parish. Mm-hmm. We're getting towards the end of our alpha season, which it just kind of wrestles with life's big questions. And there's a night on healing and prayer. And I remember talking to somebody, and just like, the guy who was next to me, Joe, pointed out to them, like, you can't find your identity in a lack, right? You can't find your identity in a negative. You have to find your identity in something that is. And and that was such a huge thing, right? It wasn't even really meant to be like this deep spiritual statement. Just, it was a very practical reality of you are not nothing. Therefore, you can't be nothing or an absence or a lack. You have to be something, and you need to find your identity in those things. And I thought that was such a meaningful statement and an important statement. So I loved that. So what we're going to do is I want you guys to think about, in addition to what's one emotion you wish you could control better, what is that middle school jam that you just loved, that, like, you know, when it came on the radio, or that, you know, if you had a mixtape with it on there, if you were, you know, same age as me, and somebody, like, made you mixtape, or you made mixtapes, like, that you would play and, like, sing at the top of your lungs when it was around. Old enough to have had people make me mixtapes.
Yeah, me too, but
I'm 35.
Oh,
what?
Yeah, no. Anyway,
all right. So with
I'm
that said,
sad.
we're gonna share a couple of answers that a few friends of ours had with you to these two questions: the emotion they wish they could control better, and their favorite middle school jam. While you think of yours.
Hi, this is J. Keith Van Stratton from the Go Factor Self podcast. An emotion I would like to control more is anger, mainly letting it out more. And my middle school jam, I'm going to go with Safety Dance. Because you got to spell and sing at the same time. S-S-S-S-A-A-A-A-F-F-F-F-E-E-E-E-T-T-T-T-Y-Y-Y-Y. Safety, dance, dance. And then it's the same note in different octaves over and over. Do, 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 do. That's the same note. That's music.
Hello, everyone. This is Luke Carey from Catching Foxes. One emotion that I wish I could control better is my anger. My, like, major jam that I would listen to when I was in middle school would probably be One Headlight by the Wallflowers. So long ago, I don't know. It was just so freaking cool. And it just had this, like, tone. It had a rustic tone to it that I didn't quite get, but I knew I really liked. Burn-o, 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 burn-o. They can have it all. I understand the cemetery trees. Did you die easy of a broken heart? Hey, come on, cry. No, man, I love the song. Nothing lasts forever. There's got to be something better than in the middle. It's me and Cinderella. I'm just going to keep on going. We can put it all together. We could have it all with one headlight. I love that song.
Thanks, Luke and Jay Keith, for sharing your answers with us. Did you ever listen to Safety Dance?
Mm-mm.
You didn't listen to Safety Dance? Oh, man.
I was not in like normal circles.
I don't feel like, I mean, I guess it's also like a little.
I'm also ignorant, granted.
Oh, you're ignorant. I can't wait till I get to your songs. Like, I'm very excited for people to share them with you. I'm going to share one of mine first.
Yeah, let me hear yours.
Because you've got more. And I'll do one of mine, and then we'll come back for the other one at the end of your list. So
I also think, well, anyway, go ahead.
Sorry. So I think two things that we both noted that are important about the music we liked in middle school was intensity and beauty, right? So,
yeah.
So for me, actually, that was really cool to kind of find that in common, because like one of mine is very much focused on the intensity component and the other one on the beauty. I mean, I guess you could say that.
Same with me at the end of the day with all, especially with some of these songs. Yeah,
like there's a spectrum.
Yeah.
So I feel like the first one, which is The Offspring, specifically the Smash album, mm-hmm. Which has like Gotta Get Away, Nitro, a couple other songs. You know,
I have such crazy memories around that album.
I know, right?
I never liked them, but I remember listening to them in the parking lot of a bank.
Yeah,
waiting for my grandpa to like fumble through his finances on a hot
did
summer day.
Did your grandpa choose that band, or did you choose that band?
No, like no. Okay, so all right. Can I insert a memory about The Offspring?
Yeah.
Okay, so, imagine 1996, mm-hmm. more or less.
Okay.
Yeah, 1996, Offspring came out with their big hits, like their big hit album. And anyway, the radio station is only playing that for the most part. It was 107.7 The End at the time. Well, that was a big alternative station in Seattle. And we're in basically more or less a suburban setting of Seattle outside of a bank. And my grandfather drives a large Ford Econoline 350 van, right, with a camper top. It looks like an automobile version of Moby Dick. and I'm sitting in, and I switch to the driver's seat, and I turn on the radio, and I'm listening to this like while I'm just waiting for my grandfather to do normal errands. That's it.
I'm glad we went down there. You know, it's really funny. Somebody noted to me the other day that since I've moved to Seattle, I tell stories like that also too, where it's just like, and everybody's like, well, so like what happened? I'm like, no,
nothing. It's just like, ethereal.
Yeah. Like it's just this moment of like pure encapsulation of an experience. I want to communicate it to you, but I don't necessarily know that it's
meaningful.
but I feel like it was. And so I want to share it with you. And so, anyways, one of the things that Father Parrish and I debated in the initial recording of this was that I felt like we should either sing or speak a couple of the lyrics. So Offspring on Smash, I think Gotta Get Away is probably the song, not necessarily that most people were aware. There's a couple other ones that people maybe were, but I also think like for me, it was always the most like meaningful. It's the one I kind of listened to over and over again. And so I'm gonna give you I'm gonna break off a little piece for you right now. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Sitting on my bed or lying wide awake, there's demons in my head and it's more than I can take. I think I'm in a roll, but I think it's kind of weak. Saying all I know is I gotta get away from me.
Yeah.
The thing about like the Offspring, though, like one of the reasons it's hard is the lead singer was like classically trained, like opera singer. So he's got this big, beautiful vocals. But this is really the intensity band. Like you listen to Nitro on this soundtrack. Like I played it for my kids the other day. I think I may have scarred them a little bit. But it's this high driven, high pace. But there's this just these beautiful, beautiful tones that the lead singer puts out. And I think it's such a weird juxtaposition for this punk band, like at that time, very clearly in the punk genre, right? Even though they got a little bit poppier later on, to have these just gorgeous, gorgeous vocals, which is very much something I resonated with. Like we've talked before about how like you are dissonant tones you find attractive.
I cannot handle dissonant tones.
I think that's one of the reasons that for me, like I loved the punk culture and scene, but I couldn't handle like the dissonance of the music, and Offspring resolved that issue for me. And so
I really get you on that. They are intense. Oh, anyway, keep going.
That's one of mine was the Offspring's the Smash album, Gotta Get Away, Nitro, all the songs on that whole album, for me really encapsulated. And I think it was like, I was this very calm, buttoned down, nice, super nerdy, big, you know, galoot of a middle school student. I don't know that I've used the word galoot in
a couple decades.
And I loved this band, and it made me feel like any amount of like animal nature that I had was being awakened within me at that point in time. And there was this deep passion. I wrestled in upper middle school and high school also, so it was Smash and Americana were both my pre match like jams.
Oh, that's beautiful. I like that.
Yeah,
so, that's a great image.
Yeah, me in a singlet. I was heavyweight, which is 275 max. Mm-hmm. I was a really light heavyweight, so I think I started out like 235. Mm-hmm. Like I got up to like 255, and then I cut weight back down to like not on purpose, but like to 245 when I was a senior, just because I worked out real hard.
I was a 175, yeah. Or no, I was 167.
So,
which is insane for me because I weigh 200 now.
So I think if we get to 100 Patreon subscribers, a live wrestling match between Father Parrish and myself, and
I'm down
in singlets, or if somebody just has some singlets and you know $20, just let us know.
As long as they don't have ringworm on them.
Did you ever get ringworm?
Yeah, dude. Sell some blue. Weeks.
Yeah. So ringworm is like a little fungus thing that you get on your skin. You can't wrestle if you have it, but it's very common for wrestlers if the mats don't get cleaned well. I don't think I ever got it because I wasn't a filthy, filthy person. And so
I only got it once. It sucked.
All right. So that's one of mine. Like I said, that's more on the intensity spectrum.
What's on the other side of this?
You're going to do yours, and then we're going to come back to my second one because you've got a list.
Maybe on the intensity spectrum, that maybe bridges both the beauty and the intensity. It would be, Be Quiet and Drive, from the Deftones. Their album Around the Fur is like the first, it was the first, really kind of like rock album, or, you know, this is, you know, metal more or less, alternative at the time was the term for it, but, that I ever bought. And I was in seventh grade. And they're, you know, I mean, just lyrics like, it feels good to know that you're mine. Now drive me far away. I don't care where, just far away. And nothing really super deep. It's the ethereal and intense nature of the song, right, that really just brought me into this kind of experience of not only beauty, but that there's something animal, like you kind of brought that out, but that those two things don't have to be separate.
No.
Right. Like the ethereal beauty of something and the existential kind of depth of something with the animal is.
I think it's a sense of kind of like something wild, right? Something uncontrollable. Mm-hmm. And I think things that are ethereal are things that are, and it's like, that's such a, by its very nature, what it means. It's hard to define what ethereal is, but like these things that are wild and out there and hard to pin down and are like, are things you can't contain or control. I think middle school me was deeply attracted, like with a sense of chaos around my life, to those types of things.
Yeah. I mean, I also wanted to make a distinction between those kinds of categories versus just the simple kind of the emotional side for me. I was a huge Weezer freak. Like huge.
Just like Buddy Holly?
Yeah. And like Buddy Holly. I remember the first time I heard that song, I was blown away. And then, but Pinkerton album when I was in middle school was huge. But that, I mean, I'm not trying to reduce it, and actually I don't want to reduce it, but like that's all just dealing with like a lot of like the romance and sexual angst of being a teenager, being in middle school, and it was important, but it wasn't on the same side of like giving me a forum for something more.
Side note about Weezer, so a couple of years ago everybody lost their poop because all of a sudden U2 songs appeared on their like, you know, iPhone. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And it was like this like big thing that, and it's just like free music and everybody was mad because they didn't want it and they couldn't get rid of it. But do you remember like,
Windows? With Buddy Holly.
Windows 95, Buddy Holly by Weezer came as like the default song on Windows 95. And like, I loved it.
I loved it.
And it was a sense of like, and like there's this concept of surprise and delight, right? Like, oh, I didn't expect this thing. And here's like this cool band that's like modern and like hip and like people love. People like
I still know all the lyrics to both albums. I know.
And it's because it was on Windows 95.
I know, but like all the songs, I know all the lyrics to both albums. It's sad and and beautiful. Sorry.
All right. No, it's you. So you've got those songs. What else is on your list?
I wanted to shoot it back to you about the other band because just
okay. So more reciprocal. So here. my other one is not a band. It's not
Music Friends. It's actually a picture.
It's just and I'm going to hold it up to the microphone and you guys will be able to see what it is. No, okay. So a lot of
it's just an emoji with a backwards beard.
A lot of people are familiar with the vocal stylings of Simon and Garfunkel, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of people are like, "Oh, like, you know, like they were a great duo together." Most people love Paul Simon. Like, so they split. People really love Paul Simon. I'm a huge Art Garfunkel fan. Like, That for me, I would put on the more of the beauty end of things, right? But there's still this, like, that's the thing I love about him. So, and here's for me how I came across Art Garfunkel as a standalone artist, period. I was watching like an old rerun of Saturday Night Live from like the 70s, and he was the musical guest. Like, it was just right after the split, and so it was like just him, and it was like kind of his, like one of his first things that he had done on his own. And like, I hear this guy who, like, I mean, like, you know, he's got this huge, like, you know, curly haired white fro, and he gets up and he, like, I don't know what to expect. Like, I'd heard Simon and Garfunkel stuff before, but never anything particular. But I just like became enraptured with this guy's voice. And it is like, so as much as like Simon may have been like the songwriter or stuff like that, Art Garfunkel didn't have a lot of music that he ever wrote himself. It's mostly covers for other things. Like, but like, What a Wonderful World, like his version of that is probably one of my all time favorite songs, you know, like, and it's this crappy, sappy, a love song, right? Like, how does it go? It's like, you know, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to please. I think that maybe by being an A student, baby, I could win your love for me. Only his is way better because he's Art Garfunkel. Now I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying. So like all these like songs that he did, I just thought they were the best thing ever. And so like I would, most of my listening would fluctuate back and forth between like Offspring and Other Punk and like Art Garfunkel.
Ah, that's awesome.
Mixing with a healthy dose of like Adam Sandler sketches mixed in. Like that was my listening in middle school and early high school was that. And probably I would actually even say Art Garfunkel and Offspring both stayed on the playlist all the way through high school. Like they may have started in middle school, but they certainly carried through the whole way for me. So, and again, I would say that's kind of more on the beauty side. Like it's just the sheer, like the vocal quality. But I would also say like there's a certain level at which like there's an intensity to that also. It's way more tamed, way more managed. But it was actually like, I think for me, it was this deep desire to like love and be loved, right? Like, so most of his songs centered around the concept of a deep love or falling in love with somebody. And there was this kind of magical but controlled and intentional quality to it that was totally the opposite of what like the Offspring represented to me, right?
Totally.
So like one was about release, escape, like, you know, of myself as well as other people. And the other one was about deep connection and a desire to love and to be loved.
Yeah, I know. I totally, that's awesome.
All right, so how about you?
When I'm stable long enough, I start to look around for love. Sorry, that was a Pink Triangle song from Weezer's Pinkerton album. Anyway, that's where he falls in love with. Anyway, right. But that really resonates with me, especially when you're like able to bridge those two different things of longing and wanting to belong in, but also wanting to be loved and love in return. And then also because this existential kind of, you know, I have crazy memories of, you know, the depth of my my spiritual and, you know, / religious sense about life when I was a kid, when I was in middle school. And I never found like there was a lot of forums for me to like express that or experience it. And even, you know, in relationships, I couldn't seemingly do it. And I tried to do it, but there was music that I found that really resonated on that level. And so I, you know, even, you know, with even now where I'm thinking about just the ability to have people share in an experience, like I don't always feel like society, you know, fosters that experience of talking about the bigger questions or whatever.
Right.
These kind of these what I call religious questions, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning existential.
Right. Yeah. Right? So if you're not religious, you could think about them as being questions that matter from our sheer existence, right? Like
and purpose, so, meaning, why am I here, et cetera. And, you know, the questions that are part of the architecture of your heart, right? You can't get rid of them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the first experiences I had was finding this when I was in Petaluma, California, which is in Santa Rosa County.
Sounds very fancy.
At the time, Petaluma was like the Everett of Santa Rosa County.
Oh, I don't know how to feel about that at all. I really like Everett, but it's also kind of like a rundown place.
You were in the Navy in Everett.
Well, you are correct about that.
I was in the Navy in Everett. Which it was a different time too.
Yeah.
But, and I love Everett actually. Anyway, I was at a soccer, you know, an elite soccer training facility, frankly. And, I was just surrounded by the vapid kind of culture and of the soccer world and just
big soccer.
Yeah. Big soccer. And just getting pissed off about like the perfectionism and lack of humanity of it all, right? The performance level. And I came across this song. Remember the days of Napster?
I am the real Napster. Napster was the original music sharing software that caused lots of huge conversations in the FCC and still like still has impacted like those conversations still like that paved the way for things like Spotify today and other stuff like that. But a lot of those questions have still never really been resolved.
Yeah. So I found this via Napster, but I ended up going to buy the album. But it was this album called Meso by DJ Crush. And the song
Crush with a K.
With a K. But before I, you know, I when I encountered the song Duality, you know, I was really moved by it. And this kind of just ethereal sound and these beautiful layerings of different textures across it. And it just gave me this like outlet for being able to have an existential experience of up and against, you know, kind of like the vapid background that I was living in, and where I felt like there was at least something beautiful existing and that I could at least listen to it, even if I didn't experience beauty. That also led to me kind of exploring both DJ Crush and DJ Shadow. DJ Shadow was on that as well. But DJ Crush's best album, in my opinion, is this one called Kyoku, which is a compilation or kind of a mashup between him and this Japanese jazz artist, this horn player named Toshinori Kondo. And this album just blew my brains, right? Because of the sheer beauty of this jazz horn and longing, deep longing, right? For something beautiful. Like the whole track is about longing. And when nothing else in society was really helping me understand what longing was. Other than that, like the last one is really, you know, DJ Shadow's Building Steam with a Grain of Salt from his Introducing album, which is his first album. And his also is talking about, you know, this kind of, you know, piano like background that's looped along with the drum, you know, the drum line and like the ethereal chanting all really helped me kind of have this experience of beauty and of, you know, asking questions of meaning in my existence. And so like these songs really kept my kind of like religious sense or spiritual sense alive when I was in middle school, when I felt like I had no one else like walking me through them. And so, you know, I mean, I could go into Modest Mouse and Heart Cook's Brain, which is really good, beautiful for me, or Botch's American Nervoso album, which is a hardcore album, which they put on the show notes, but it's just a lot of screaming. But that was
so go check it out now.
Yeah, it was more of the that's where you have like this kind of polyphonic scream effect with these, you know, really deep chugging guitars. And they're from Tacoma. They're a revolutionary hardcore band for America, but they're originally from Tacoma.
Yeah.
And they really helped me understand what it meant to actually experience angst.
Yeah.
It was great.
So it's been really fun. So I've recently gotten into just normal baseball hats, which my wife hates when I wear hats. I used to wear hats all the time.
You look good with hats.
She does not like it. She doesn't have to. She's in the room. She doesn't need to comment right now.
I can't wear hats. I have an odd noggin.
Yeah, well, I mean,
ooh, that's what these should be called, odd noggins. Ooh,
okay, I do like that. We've been debating what we should call them, odd noggins. Odd noggins, actually, I like a lot. And so, I have two Sub Pop hats. Which Sub Pop's a music label, mm-hmm. Based out of Olympia, I think, technically. But it's a Northwest music label, and it's like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden.
Yeah, and like, you know, Sleater-Kinney.
But I said bands people who would know who were
Sleater-Kinney. Well, okay, cool.
So they launched all those bands, and it's really funny because like I'll wear it other places, and so like I'm not a big music guy. Like I've talked about it. Like I feel like that part of my brain doesn't work, but it's really funny because it's just good Seattle culture. So like when I'm traveling, it's like it's a good piece of like, where are you from here? People who recognize it get really excited, like, you know, and I know enough to get by. Like, I know, like, you know, here are the people they launch, here's what it is. But it's really interesting to me. Like you talk about like outside of Tacoma, like you ask anybody else in the world, like where Nirvana is from, Seattle. You ask people in Seattle and they say
Aberdeen.
That's right. And but I would have said Aberdeen, which means I'm not from Seattle.
Oh,
right?
Gosh, dude. Aberdeen. I mean, it's, you know, it's good. It's fine.
I'm never talking to shibboleth. You again. But yeah. So yeah, it's one of those things where like there's so much meaning and purpose to music up here. It's really like soaked into the area, and I think like that's a huge part of the human cultural experience, but especially like America, it's one of the few things legitimately we can feel like our own is music. Like almost everything else we've inherited from our countries of origin, and even though music may be an evolution of you know past music and other things like that, you know you can trace back, you know, like the roots of rock to blues, to jazz, to classical music. I mean, you can do that, but the reality is like it's really interesting to be in a place where music is such a part of the landscape and it's such a modern thing, right? Like so in Seattle, the music that it created culturally is relatively recent in the scope of human history, but the roots of that music like do really trace back. Like I talk to people all the time who are local musicians who do you know, like whether they do classical music, blues, jazz, whatever else it is, but they almost all like deeply love the local music scene and the bands that have come up here, even if it's completely different style of music. And so that's one of the things that I really love about here, about the music here, is that like even if it's a completely different style, even if I wouldn't like it, the average Seattleite wouldn't like the type of music it is, if it's local, they love it. And I think that's something that's really significant and really meaningful also too. I don't know why.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's significant because, you know, if I can put my interpretation on it.
You're from here. So yeah, I'm just a guy from Texas talking.
Well, everybody needs an experience of beauty, right? Like the way I think about reality is just that, like, regardless of what people believe, when I look at people in action, right, what they need, what they desire, everybody's looking for beauty. An experience is something that brings them some kind of transcendence or sense of, at least in their own language. And when it comes to, you know, Seattle's and its music, I really do think that it's part of the landscape of people intuitively looking for a beautiful transcendent experience. And, you know, you can't get rid of that drive. I mean, even if you don't have words for it, people need it. I mean, there was a commentator I was listening to, and he had this whole thing called champagne socialism. And he's just being tongue in cheek, but he's talking about, you know, he goes like, you know, I definitely support, you know, universal healthcare and these things. Right. But at the end of the day, like, you know, or, you know, you're going to die. Right. So you could be well your whole life, but you're still going to die, or you're going to have good housing your whole life, but you're still going to die. I need something beautiful. So why not provide to everybody free of charge really awesome, beautiful champagne?
Oh, man.
And it's kind of beautiful, actually. He's not being tongue in cheek with that part. He's right. Being serious. Like, he wants people to experience beauty.
What is the point of a long, healthy, mediocre, bland life without beauty?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that concept of such a modern concept of quantity over quality. And the reality is, like, we should be seeking both, right? I mean, we should be seeking both and understanding that we won't typically have both, you know? And so, no, I think that's so huge. And that sounds like a good place to wrap up our conversation. Yeah. Do you have any other party nuggets of wisdom that you want to share with folks?
Gosh. No, I mean, just be honest, be true, be kind. That's my high school motto.
My high school motto is do you want to make out? That was my high school motto.
Wow, that's,
or at least I
that's,
said it. At least I said
I think
it
that's more honest.
Anyway. So here's the deal. We are going to have a few more episodes, I think two more episodes in our mid-season break while we are recording some episodes for next season.
About me.
We talked about it a little bit already. One of the things we're doing during the season break is, as Father Parrish was just trying to whisper about. Oh my gosh, don't do that. He has got a busier and busier schedule. He's got basically two emotionally full-time jobs, even if they are theoretically both part-time assignments. And so he's not going to be able to do every episode. So I am auditioning some new co-hosts. Father Parrish will always be in the rotating stable of co-hosts, as he puts it, whenever there's a cool episode he wants to be on. And he will always be the person who I do priest versus layman episodes if we have a down week. So you will still hear him around, but you hear some new voices. I'm really excited. I just talked to a friend of mine who has she's a feminist. She's a very proud feminist who's also a phenomenal leader in the Catholic Church. And we are going to be interviewing somebody who is in charge of the new wave feminist movement, but also somebody who's just a secular feminist who's not a Christian. Also, we're going to do a two-part episode.
Are we going to interview Sarah Kaczmarek?
Sarah Kaczmarek is on my list of people we're going to interview.
She's the shit.
She is. I'm going to interview. Whatever. We got Ian the Pirate Guy. We've got a couple other podcasters who are going to come on. I just went to an event for Patreon last night. One of our season two commitments is to not suck at Patreon. And so we're bringing a team member on to help manage social media and that, who's also just going to be a delightful new co-host in that group also. But we've got some musicians, some other people. I'm also going to be doing a live show in Dallas, Texas on April 17th, I believe it's going to be. Location is to be determined, so keep an eye out for that. Check us out at facebook.com/The Threshold Podcast. Also, if you are a Patreon supporter at $5 or higher, after this, Father Parrish and I are going to put Everlong on one of our phones, and we are going to sing along to it and record it and post it there. So if you're a $5 or higher Patreon person, you're going to get to hear both of us try to sing. That's actually what broke our first one, was I wanted him to sing the lyrics. And
I just started yelling expletives at Tony.
Yeah, and so... but it's been good. We're looking forward to this. The next week, I think we're going to talk about what recharges and drains our soul, but also what's the weirdest thing we've ever Googled is going to be the other part of that conversation. So if you have thoughts about that, please give us a call, leave a message. You can get that information in the show notes. We'd love to feature you.
Can we call it Odd Noggins?
I like Odd Noggins. We'll see. I mean, you have to wait to see what happens when the episode comes out. You never know. And so, but until next time, please get out there, FNF ability, and talk about what really matters. We'll see you guys soon.
Your friends behind, 'cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends.